Hey, Mart here.
Oh my God, hi.
Listeners want to know what's going on with your love life.
Oh my God, don't get me started. These apps have me going crazy. I'm on there for hours, but I can't seem to find a date.
Have you heard of Motto? Motto is the new no-nonsense hookup app for gay and queer people.
Hookup apps have become a staple in queer culture, but they also come with the bullshit. Headless torsos, blank profiles, catfish after catfish, and I feel like I'm always scrolling the grid.
Well, on Motto, every profile is verified by a real human, and every photo has a face.
Ooh.
Motto sends you daily matches of people who match your interests and kinks. There are no fees, no ads, and no nonsense.
I love that. Sounds like my kind of app.
Get Motto today by going to the link in this episode's description or use invite code ZVOGS when signing up. That's ZVOGS when signing up.
Ooh, I think I will. Motto: gay and queer hookups without the nonsense.
Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I know, wig, I feel that already. Wig, okay. Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I am ready for my wig to go flying.
Recording in process. Oh, progress, not process, whatever. Whatever. Hate that
I'm
bitch.
editing this part out, so go
No,
ahead.
you're not.
Yeah.
Hi, kids.
Hi.
It's me, Martir.
It's me, C. Tepper.
And this is Wig It
Wow.
Out. Closing in on our fifth anniversary. Isn't that crazy, Caitlin? This is episode
It
90, me.
is. That sounds about right. That's so
And
stupid.
I'm excited for our guest today because
Yay.
she's an old friend. She's young, but she's an old friend.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I knew how young she was.
We
And
were
then I'm
doing the
like,
math earlier, and
and
we're
I'm
like,
like,
wait a
oh,
minute.
she's still 10 years younger than me. Nothing has changed.
Yes. Anyways, Caitlin, who are we talking to? Who do we have today?
We have the one and only Obscura.
Woo! Welcome, welcome.
Yeah.
Hello. I'm glad to be here finally. I
I
feel
know.
y'all have had this podcast for
For
800 years,
five
and I have
years.
yet to make an appearance.
I mean,
Well,
honestly,
someone
we've.
quit drag a few times.
Yeah, that's
I
true,
know it's too
actually.
complicated to get a hold of. I feel like
You're
it's
like
not
hard to book.
incredibly. I'm unbookable, as a queen once said backstage the show. It was me to myself,
Ooh.
looking in the mirror.
Yeah,
Do you know that one meme that's like the I think it's the WikiHow, and it's like the guy like pointing in the mirror? No? Okay, never mind.
I
Never
don't know what
mind.
you're talking
I'll
about.
find
Oh,
it later.
yeah. And
Yeah.
he has like a
He's
tear
like
in his
really
eye.
mad and he's just
Yeah.
like that's me.
Yeah, no, I know that one.
Okay. So, Obscura, you are one of our distinguished guests of being a native New Yorker. What was it like growing up in New York?
It was a weird time. A lot of people like ask me like, what was it like growing up in New York? And I can't really speak for how it was different from growing up elsewhere because
Yeah.
I never grew up elsewhere. I was like always in New York. I know a lot of people like lived elsewhere and moved to New York, but I have just been here the entire time. Like I had tastes of other places here and there growing up. Like my parents had like a little house out on the North Fork of Long Island for a little bit. So got to experience some small town life. But I would say like growing up in New York, I felt incredibly robbed of that like John Hughes high school movie experience. Like there was never a football game to go to. No one True.
drove to school. We took the subway. We
Yeah.
walked to and from school in our Air Force Ones in the snow. And it was what it was. What was interesting is like I started going to a private Jewish school when I was really, really young. And it was clearly not a fit because me and religion just, we don't get along. So I started going to public school and then I ended up going to Bronx Science, which is a school
Oh, that's a very hard school to get into.
that many smart people go to and
Yeah.
do very cool, amazing Nobel Prize winning
Yeah.
scientific research. and I cross-dress. So it just
so
goes
who's
to show
the real
you that,
winner?
That this New York conspiracy of get your kids started on an early science career by sending them to a specialized high school if they are in any way queer. I know multiple people from that school who are not doing drag, but are definitely doing kooky, silly, artistic shit, which I think is fabulous because that school was very much not a friendly school for the arts. There was one art teacher. And I would say like art was my favorite subject because I've always focused so much on art, especially when it comes to my drag. But yeah, growing up in New York was weird.
Speaking of high school, you started drag pretty young. How did you get involved with drag at such a young age?
Okay, so I always like to say, I've said this on other podcasts, so I'll return the line. My real mother, like my birth mother, is my drag mother. My mother used to go out to the Pyramid Club and Jackie and convene, like she's to this day is still friends with a lot of people who still work in nightlife. Like we ran into Suzanne Barsh doing something and Suzanne was like, oh my god, Marisa. And it was just, it's like a little weird when your mom's so ahead of the curve when it comes to nightlife, and there's friends of hers that I've known for years that still DJ because my mom was a DJ very like briefly. But it was very interesting kind of like finding out about drag so early and always not feeling like it was a weird thing, because I know many queens found out about Drag Race, at least like the queens of this generation found out about drag through Drag Race rather, and didn't have exposure to it. Meanwhile, I have been exposed to drag for as long as I remember. But I don't think the gears, I would say the earliest time that my mom could sense that there was something awry, that this child may be exhibiting some homosexual tendencies, was when in first grade in art class, the teachers asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I had written a wig designer. And I had drawn a picture of like a wig boutique with all these beautiful wigs. And I went to an Orthodox Jewish school. So my mom
is so
called on the phone by the art teacher. Keep in mind, Orthodox Jewish school, many of the teachers at the school
wear wigs, right?
Women cover their hair, they wear wigs. And she calls on my mom, she's like, I just want you to know what I won't say my government name, what he wrote in class today, when we asked what they want to be when they grow up. And my mom's like, yeah, he wants to be a wig designer. Wouldn't that be your lucky day?
She gooped and gagged them.
But yeah, truly. My mother is truly the queen of reading. It's where I learned to be so absolutely horrible.
I want to meet your mom.
She's been to some shows here and there, but we'll get into that. But basically the gears started turning around when I was in high school. I was like, because then Drag Race was popular. It was like season 7. Violet Chachki had just won Drag Race. I was like, first off, because I caught the butt end of season 7, which is like many people's kind of like, I feel like many people I know, that was like their first, like, this is the season I'm going in and being a very hardcore Drag Race fan on. So I caught the butt end of that, and everybody was like, drag, 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 drag. And I was like, what is this? I want to try it. Like, I knew what it was, but I was like, how do I do this? And I remember back in the day, there was this drag queen named Misty Maven on YouTube. Her YouTube account was called Petrolude, and she did makeup tutorials. So I like watched a few of them and I was like, okay. My 16-year-old self was like, I can do this. I had not a pinch of female clothing, not a pair of heels, nothing. And I decided to just start playing around with makeup. I had a friend who kind of was like, oh, I want to put you in drag. They kind of just like put a bunch of eyeshadow on my face. But I was like, oh, this is it. I gotta do this.
So I started experimenting more, and by the time the end of senior year rolled around, or I guess the entirety of senior year, I kind of was very into it because I went to Halloween in drag, and then I went to prom in drag, and I had like my one pair of heels. Actually, I think I had two pairs of heels, and I started entering these online Instagram competitions to kind of challenge myself to do better things. And also everything was so drag race centered at the time. So I was like, I have to compete so that I can be taken seriously by these other people in this community. One of which I recently saw at a show, which was really, really funny, because these are like the drag queens I've known the longest, are people that I've known from online being like teenagers doing drag. And then there was this one drag queen from Illinois who was like, I'm trying to start this new experimental YouTube drag show. This was before Dragula. This was before Camp Wanakiki. This was before anything. There was just Drag Race at this point. And literally, she was like, I want to make it like a little bit spooky and whatever. And literally, the trailer dropped, and within a day, Dragula was announced.
Wow.
So it was so funny being like, oh, we're like the first competition that likes spooky drag queens and is open to, young drag queens. But it was very cool to be a part of that at a young age, but it definitely took a toll on me mentally. It kind of exposed me to the darker parts of community. And yeah, that's pretty much where I got my start in drag and what would turn into a whatchamacallit, recurring issue.
Not recurring
I
issue.
just want to ask about prom and doing drag.
Prom?
And you were still at the Orthodox school?
No. This was a Bronx Science.
Oh, Bronx Science. Okay. You're at Bronx Science.
So I was at Bronx Science, which is, a pretty nerdy school. I mean, not
Yeah.
everybody's a nerd there, but it's a pretty big
Third zone.
nerd zone. But
Yeah, right.
there was some queer kids, but I just remember I was like, I want to go to prom and drag. I saw a few other people do it, and I was like, I want that. I want to do that. So normally they have a really fierce prom at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, but that was under
Ooh.
construction. So we had it at Chelsea Piers. And there's
That's
nothing
such a
like,
random location.
yeah, I felt like so many parties growing up were at Chelsea Piers though, because it was like a place, because there's like everything sports related. There's bowling, there's ice
True.
skating,
That's
whatever.
funny.
There's like
Oh,
the gymnastics room that people love.
I didn't realize that was a place.
Chelsea Piers is like,
Chelsea Piers?
it's like this huge athletic
Yeah.
complex on
There's
the
like a million
Waterfront
things
Highway.
there.
I thought it was just like the name of like where the piers were. Like,
No.
oh, and like in the one drag queen.
Oh yeah, Chelsea Piers, the
I
drag
don't go to
queen.
Manhattan, girls.
How can we tell that she's a transplant
I know, right?
I
Without
know.
fuck
Saying
off.
she's a transplant.
Yeah, fuck off. Fuck off.
Yeah, so I showed up in like a purple kind of Marilyn Monroe situation dress with like a little Marilyn Monroe white hairstyle and very soft makeup that I did not feel pretty in. But everybody was like, you're so pretty. And then I remember like this one boy who was a little fruity walking up to me on prom and being like, you're so brave. I wish I was as brave as you. And I'm like,
Oh,
I'm just doing me. Maybe if some of
paving the
y'all
way.
spent a little less time in high school bullying me and my friend group, you would be more inclined to be a more interesting person. I mean, this person was, their name was Michael, and they went by a different name in school because they didn't like how boring the name Michael was.
Ooh. We know plenty of
But
people like that.
yeah.
So Obscura, why did you change your name from Michael?
I would love a drag queen to be named Michael. That is so
Yeah,
cool.
like that's
Or
just
just
their
like
name,
Mike.
Mike.
Just that would be incredible. I
That
think
would be a
that would be
good
the real
dragging name.
camp. I feel like Brooklyn drag queens have gotten more creative with the names. There's been some interesting new queens I've seen popping up.
Like what? Name them.
I don't know. I love names like Mystery Minx. And I mean, these aren't queens that are from New York. They're like queens who I think did drag elsewhere. Like nothing I know isn't from New York. But like, I also like feel like they're a callback to that bygone era of drag names where people would like choose anything as a drag name. Like Paperclip.
Yes.
Like that's the drag name.
My favorite drag name is still Pickle. There's one in
LA. Pickle from LA.
Yeah, LA. But I'm like, this is fucking genius.
There was a drag thing that I knew whose name was Banana Toothpaste, and I think about that a lot.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
And on the flip side, I love names that just make you feel uncomfortable.
Oh.
I don't know if Martyr knows this drag queen or you know this drag queen, but she did drag very briefly when I first started going out to the West End, which was probably in sometime in early 2018. Her name was Aviva Dickman.
Oh my god, yeah, I remember her.
And she performed this number that was her performing Ladies Who Lunch. And there was just like car crash sounds mixed in. And she was just standing on stage with a martini glass as like car crash sounds happened and lighting cues. And she just made all these faces. And her look was so like matronly, but she was like this hairy ass guy. It was, she was fabulous. And I wish that more people got to experience Aviva Dickman. Like I know very few drag queens that can speak for having seen her perform.
I'm gonna steal that concept because that's really funny.
That's a genius concept, honestly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking of all these drag queens that don't live in the city that I've seen them perform certain things that I thought were hilarious. And I'm like, these drag queens, like, oh my god, Poppy doesn't do drag anymore. I feel like stealing her mixes. She had great mixes.
She did.
She did.
Going back, or maybe you were still in high school. I'm assuming you were out of high school by then. You started going out to like Bazaar, Bushwick.
So
may she rest in peace.
That was, I want to say it was freshman year of college. Bijou Bentley was visiting, who she used to live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, but she moved to like Sacramento area. But she was visiting. And she was like one of my Judy's online, because I didn't have like a huge circle when it came to drag queens that I really fucked with online, just because a lot of them were just mean children at that rate. And Bijou was also older, so I felt like it was like less like talking to somebody who just wanted to be like a-ki-ki-ki-ki, and you look like shit and blah 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 blah. So she had come up and she was doing Emmy Greats A+ at Bazaar Bushwick. And that was like my first time going to a bar in drag. They like kind of snuck me in. Not really. It was a drag show, and at Bazaar Bushwick, if you were in drag, they don't card you.
Yeah, I do.
RIP Bazaar Bushwick, but that place had so many. I spent so much time there and the Rosemont when I was underage, because that was like where to go if you wanted to see a fun drag show. And I feel like those places, well, I mean, obviously one of them's closed, but the other one, I feel like doesn't have as much impact in the same way, at least, as it used to in like 2019.
You know what's funny? Bazaar is like untouched. Like it's closed. You can't go in there. And they rent it out for like movies, I think. But like it's completely untouched in there.
Well, it's because they had that huge lawsuit, whatever.
Yeah.
Just like,
One of my prized cursed possessions is I still have a drink ticket from Bazaar Bushwick that I use as a bookmark.
They had such a fierce logo.
Yeah.
I fucking love those drink tickets. I have one somewhere in storage, like a laminated one.
Yeah, mine's laminated. A very bizarre by the name venue. I do miss it a lot too, because that's where like a lot of the art weirdos went. And since it's closed, it's like kind of hard for like that kind of space to like pop up, I think. So I do miss it. I don't miss the management, obviously. I think that's shitty, but
owners.
There's not a lot of venues like that anymore, which sucks.
Yeah, no, it does suck. And like, I honestly, like, sometimes I just like get very like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm like, what if I opened up a gay bar that was the essence of Bizarre Bushwick? And then I'm like, I know nothing about business. I could never open up an establishment. Also, I looked up how expensive it is to open up and operate a bar. And I'm like, that is,
why would you need that? Like investors and stuff. It's not just one person.
Yeah, no. I know. But like, it pains me to know that there are very few places that were built for weird drag like Bazaar anymore. I feel like there still are great venues in the city, but Bazaar was just such a weird and special place. And the fact that it was my first gay bar that I started going out to, and I got to see some incredible people perform on that stage. I got to see Sasha. I want to say right after she had won Drag Race, she did a little pop-up at a show there, the Fuck You Review, which was a fabulous little burlesque show. And then
That was a big on burlesque. I forgot about that completely. But it was like a big burlesque bar.
And then I also really liked I'd seen Vander perform there. I totally forget what party it was for, but Vander did a number at Bazaar randomly.
Oh, I remember that too.
I think you were there. You must have been, maybe.
I think Frankie maybe told me about it, because I think I remember there was an issue because I think Vander left a phone somewhere, like outside or like in the snow or something. I don't remember.
Oh.
But I remember that story. But
it was a time. It was definitely a time period in drag, I feel like, that era. But I started really finding myself and feeling comfortable in drag outside of the house when I started going to nightgowns.
Yeah.
The only place where I, like, legally was allowed to be in
drag.
It was the only really old ages drag show in the city that wasn't Lips or Lucky Chang's, which, you know, I've been to Lucky Chang's once, and it just was not what I, it's not the type of drag that's really for queer people.
No, but it's very straight.
But not to talk shit on the girls that make their coin there, because it is a very fruitful business. But
it's more like tourist friendly, right?
Yeah, it's definitely like drag in a commercial sense.
Yeah.
But
I'm no shade, but isn't that all of Manhattan?
These days, yeah. No, I was talking to Vander after Madeline's Banshee show that just happened recently. And I was like, it's so cool to see a show in Midtown Manhattan that is like actual cool, artistic, and fun drag that isn't like, I'm going to perform 12 Whitney Houston songs back to back in this rhinestoned bodysuit.
Damn, coming for Shaquita.
No, never. I would never come for her. I've actually never seen her perform.
What?
I have never ever done an open stage in New York. Ever. I never did Drag Wars. I never did what's the other one? Star Search. Mm-hmm. I never did Mad Mondays when Mad Mondays was like the moment.
That still happens.
Yeah, like
still, I know, but isn't it like not even hosted by Mad anymore?
No, that was a long time ago. Yeah, she left.
She only did the first year. What was I gonna say? I don't know if I've seen Shaquita perform either, and I used to go
what?
To. I don't think she performed at Drag Wars.
Not really, but like,
yeah,
she's not hard to find, is what I'm talking about.
My thing is, like, I only know her from that. I know she's like bigger than that, but like, that's my connection to Shaquita.
But yeah, that's literally same. Like, my frame of reference for certain Manhattan drag queens is like the same four bars that they have their shows at. And that's something that I kind of despised about Manhattan drag for a while, because I'm like, there's like four bars at this point that are owned by the same management. And they just book the same exact queens.
Yeah.
what I loved about a certain cursed bar that closed in Midtown that was very large and was open with the promise of of providing for the community in a better way than other parts of Hell's Kitchen. They started out, you don't understand. They started out with a killer like opening like repertoire.
Yeah.
Drag queens that normally don't have shows. Like, and they gave shows to people of all types of drag, which was so cool to see. But then they slowly started cutting the ones that didn't fit the Manhattan cookie cutter of drag, which was unfortunate to see.
Well, there was a, it's pretty well documented, like, their downfall, so.
Yeah, and I do think that it was a great thing that it closed, because that bar
it needed to close.
With all these great promises and quickly just folded faster than anybody could really spend any amount of time there. I mean,
I never went.
I feel like there were people that went out there every week. I went maybe three times in its very brief opening.
I went once. And then it closed like a week later. I'm not even joking.
LOL.
That's so far too.
Going back a little bit, how did you decide on your drag name?
Drag name. Okay. So what's funny is a lot of people back in the day were familiar with, there was a show called Oddities that was like on the Science Channel or Sci-Fi or something that was about an antique shop that used to be open in New York City called Obscura. My name has nothing to do with that shop. Which is funny, because at one point that shop reached out to me in the DMs to tell me to change my name.
Oh.
Because it was confusing people.
What?
And they didn't want my person being associated with their store. Which I'm like, you're
closed it was a real
now,
store.
So who won? Who won? You're closed. Oops. You only do online sales and you don't have a TV show anymore. So
was that the one on Broadway?
It was in the East Village. The one on Broadway is Evolution.
Right.
Continue. But, my name actually comes from the camera obscura, which translates to something in Latin. Who the hell knows? but it obscura in Latin means dark. Darkness. But I always thought that I knew from the jump that I wanted my drag to kind of be centered around like a darker character, a more villainous woman, a more evil woman. And I felt like Obscura was the perfect name to encapsulate that. But also, like, I know that I don't know if it was your last guest, Athena, had mentioned something about like the power of the single name.
Yes.
But I absolutely just love having, I started drag with a last name, but I quickly dropped it because I was like, I don't need it. It doesn't really do anything to my name. And I feel like Obscura. It was my birthstone, which is Peridot.
Oh.
I vaguely remember that.
It was only around for a very short amount of time. And then I changed my name to just Obscura because I thought it was much cuntier. So that's kind of how I landed on my name, and I had thought about changing it a few times, but I'm like, it is such a good drag name. I should never, ever, ever think of rebranding.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's great.
One time, actually, Neon had told me, she's like, girl, are you in Boston? And I'm like, what do you mean? Am I in Boston? She's like, a girl named Obscura signed up for the show tonight. Like, it was some open stage. And I was like, well, you could tell her to change her name. Because there can only be one of us.
I always say, pick the stupidest name you can think of, because no one else will ever think of it again. Hence,
literally.
Mark's here.
True.
The one and only, the one and stupid. For our last little question for this section, what would you say some of your big influences in drag are?
I would say my biggest influences, I'm very influenced by like old school New York drag, is where I kind of have my attitude from, like how I approach drag, kind of how I feel about drag. I feel like we're in this current political landscape when it comes to drag where, and I'm so glad that there are queens like Amanda Tory Meeting on Drag Race that are kind of challenging the, to be good, you have to look incredible. You have to serve a certain personality. You have to be able to do all these things. And I feel like when Amanda got on the show, she kind of revived a little bit of that like old New York mindset where like, you can look not great, but if your personality is there, if what you're doing has a vision, people will come, people will love it. So I've kind of always approached drag with like, I don't really care about looking the best, but as long as I have some kind of message behind what I'm doing, I feel good about what I'm doing, which is like why I started to hate drag for a while, because I kind of got caught up in that cookie cutter mold, and that's a whole other mess. But I would say that like in general is a big influence. I would also say that some of the more campier and kookier queens that have been on Drag Race have definitely, I would say like Trixie was definitely an influence when I started drag, because I was like, and like Bianca, I was like, oh wow, I love how crazy their makeup is. And I didn't really know much about drag makeup at that time and the different kind of classifications, but I was like, I want to do makeup like that. And I'm glad to have come back to doing bigger makeup because I love the way that it looks. I feel like for a while I was just getting very lazy and I was very uninspired. But and of course Sasha is always such a huge influence. I mean, that was like the first big drag queen I spent any amount of time around, so I feel like naturally a lot of her thinking kind of trickled in. And also like before she was even announced on Drag Race, I'd come across one of her videos on YouTube and I was just like, because I'd been thinking like maybe a few weeks before that, I was like, wouldn't it be so cool if a drag queen used projection mapping in their performances? Because I had been doing a lot of engineering kind of scheming in high school and like early in college. And I was like, I wish there was something, a drag queen that could kind of incorporate that into their performance. And then I saw Sasha doing stuff with projectors and I was like, okay, there is somebody doing that and they're doing it very well. So I would say that like a big, I would say performing style wise, she definitely played a big part into how I approach my numbers. I mean, I am by no means a dancer. I am by no means that girl who shows up and just comes out in an outfit and does nothing at the same time. But I feel like when I'm able to approach things artistically, that's when I really excel in drag. And thanks to queens like Sasha, like honestly, Vander is also incredibly artful in her, the way she approaches her performances. I would say that has definitely dictated why I am the way that I am.
And we would like to thank Frisbee Jenkins for her contributions.
Absolutely. Always.
And on that note,
Drag Race season 248.
I'm gonna be the winner. And on that note, we'll take our first little break. We'll be right back, kids. Bye.
Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I know, wig. I feel that already. Wig, okay. Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I am ready for my wig. Go flying.
Well yes
that
has become such a like just like throwaway term that just entered my like vernacular lately, and like I can't stop saying it.
Like, well, it is hard for me to not respond to a text message with, well, yes.
I always have Martyr's version of saying that in my head, like just at random times.
What am I, what's my version?
Just you saying it.
Well, yes.
Yeah, like the way you say it. Also, because okay. I guess because I've been editing too, like now it's even more in my brain.
Oh, yeah, I probably said a lot.
Yeah, so I was like, but like even before that, I feel like it was in my brain, but now it's like really in my brain.
There was one time, this is when first came out, and I noticed it's like snuck into our vocabulary and no one talks about it, but they said fully a lot. Yeah. And it's like ingrained in my brain. Because I started using it and I still use it. But I tracked it back down to, because I saw everyone was fucking using it. And I was like, where is this coming from?
I remember when fully, and also fun fact about wig. Wig was a term started by teen queens. People use wig, like that gay boy on American Idol going wig in front of
teen queens.
That language came from teen queens. We had originated so many random drag words that slowly got adopted through trickling up in the community. And it is so funny to me that there's other ones that didn't really make it that far. There was also pigment instead of wig, where people would just be like, that is so pigment. It was so stupid. And then there was a version of wig that was like wigs in space, wig evaporated, that also never made it past the teen queen community. But it is extremely true that phrase did originate amongst the teenage drag community.
I'm keeping this in, by the way.
Well, yes. Also, speaking of the way that people say, well, yes, Martyr was at the show. Nothing kept saying it that night, but the way that she was saying it was taking me out, because it wasn't, well, yeah. She was like, well, yeah. Something like that. And it was just, she kept saying it. And it was, that party was crazy. That was such a fun time.
That was a good night.
I hardly ever go out just to party and not see a show. And that was, it has converted me.
I need to start doing that too, TBH.
Should we just start the second part?
Yeah, I guess we're here. welcome back. We're talking shit. We're doing deep dives in drag history, including reviving a dead drag queen's show, called Poppy's Playhouse at the West End. Obscura, how was it like being a monthly cast member?
Okay. So I used to go to Gina Tonic and Gilda Wabbit's Drag Brunch.
I forgot about that.
I used to go to Sisters Drag Brunch at L&W Oyster Company every single week. I would live there. I had my little group of girlies and we would go. And let's just say that was another space. Like, I never went in drag, but that was another space that I always felt very welcome at, because it was like an old ages drag brunch and it was a fun time. And one week Gilda was out of town and Gina's like, oh, there's this drag queen filling in for me called Poppy. You're gonna really fucking like her. She's crazy. She's stupid. Anyways, I show up to the drag brunch and I get a look at her and I'm like, this is the drag queen that you I'm really gonna like work. I did not know what to expect. Cause I like, you know, back in the day, Poppy looked, she used her actual eyebrows. She wore like no makeup. And she just wore that one pink dress with the flowers on it, like every other show. She happened to be wearing that dress the first time I saw her. And she performed her Meryl Streep number, which is like a mix of a bunch of different Meryl Streep things. And she performed her Star Wars number that ends with like a climax of her pulling out a toy lightsaber and pretending to shove it up her butt, and then a Chewbacca sound, like a moan, is played. And I was so incredible. I was like, okay, now I get it. She is that girl. And I like hadn't really seen her perform other than that, but she had texted me
and because we like exchanged information, I was like, she's like, oh, you should come to the West End, they don't card. And I was like, that sounds like a great way to get into drag, which I've been dying to do because I saw other queens do it. I saw Aquaria, I saw now Cheeky do it, and I was like, I want to be the underage drag.
Yeah, all the underage girls, I remember when they were all underage.
And so I was invited, me and Frankie, because me and Frankie, we were very close at that time. We were invited to perform. It was a show with, It was Diana Dash, very early into her moving to the city, I want to say, before she started styling wigs. It was Serena T, and it was, what's her name? Blair Bitch. And then it was me and Frankie, and it was kind of a crazy experience because I like wanted to put to, it was a Valentine's themed, the anniversary of me performing in drag is coming up at the end of the month. It was like a Valentine's Day themed show at the end of the month. And I performed It's My Life by No Doubt with a bunch of costume reveals that weren't, I actually have what I wore over there in one of my storage cubbies, but I found it recently in storage and I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it's a bloody kimono from my first ever drag performance. It was a very fun experience. I was like, I need to start performing again, but I have like nowhere to go. Poppy was like, y'all did great, because Frankie also hadn't had a lot of performances before. Poppy was like, y'all were great, do you want to come back and like just experiment with drag every month? I was like, absolutely. So I became a permanent fixture at Poppy's Playhouse, which was a very goofy show, and Poppy is just such a funny and amazing drag queen. And I wish the world got to see more of how insanely ridiculous she is. I will say she was incredibly ridiculous on Drag Race. But
I mean, yeah, her short moments on the show, like she still like, made an impact.
There is a part of me that's like, I wish she would come back to drag so that she can absolutely eat up an All-Stars season. Because but also, I know what it's like to be basically bullied off the internet. So I definitely like feel for not wanting to do drag because I have quit many a time.
She can always come back.
But yeah, Poppy's Playhouse was a very fun experience. It then translated into me later doing Ultimate Drag Pageant.
Yeah.
A whole time. And that's where I got very close with a certain black, white, and red drag queen.
Who could that be?
I love Vicky DeVille.
I love Salmonella.
Okay, I do. I talked to Caitlin about this because in our little lineup, you said you competed in UDP, which you did, as did I. We were in the same season. Coming in fourth. I don't remember this.
So, if you'll remember, at the finale, they made the top four lip sync. I was one of the top four that lip synced, and the top three ended up being Coco, Sierra Mist, and Salmonella. But yes, it was because of my performance at the finale that they put me in the top four, not because of my track record. I will say early in the competition, I was kind of just like scooting by. Then I started to do well at the end of the competition when Marty Gold Cummings wasn't even there. So the guest judges loved me, but I also started to amp it up. Poppy helped me a lot with my package towards the end, like helped me with my mixes, and that's when I started to do better. But it was definitely an interesting time. I felt like I got better at performing through that competition because I kind of understood a bit more about, I don't know, the motions of like how a drag number should be constructed so that the audience can have the maximum satisfaction. And I remember the person that I tried the hardest to impress was Michael Block, because he would come to every drag show at the West End.
And I vaguely remember all this.
You would know very, very clearly if he liked your number or not. Because he would talk to you after the show if he liked it. And he would not pay attention to you if your number was bad. So the first few times I performed, he did not talk to me. And then I performed my projection numbers, and he was like, "You like what you did tonight, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Because it was good." And I'm like, "So you're calling every other one of my performances a bag of shit?" Got it.
Well, I'll say it to your face. They were not.
Well, I was gonna say, I still think about your Haunted Mansion performance a lot.
Oh yeah, me too.
That was a fun one.
That was so good.
I miss kind of doing those kookier, campier performances. I want to bring them back in some way, but I feel like my drag has evolved so much, I have to figure out where they go.
What was the drag showdown all-stars?
DS Divas.
So I had just gotten fired from Disney.
Because of COVID.
Because of COVID, the pandemic had just started, and I waltzed my way back to New York City after living in sunny Anaheim. And I got a message from Crystal Ball, who hosted that competition, saying, "Hey, I really want to make All-Stars," because she'd tried to make it happen before. She's like, "I really want to make All-Stars happen, especially now that we're all at home. Like, we all need to be doing drag." I was like, "Okay, I'll do it." I had this lovely severance package from Disney, and I was living at home. And I had nothing to do. My parents were just, you know, taking care of me and my siblings at that point. And I'd spent a lot of time out on Long Island. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to use this severance package to kind of get a bunch of fierce drag for this competition and really do well in it. And I finally felt like I was inching towards, with that competition, the kind of level of drag that I've always wanted to do from even when I started doing drag. And what stinks about that experience is that it was a terrible experience, because midway through the competition, and I am gonna name drop, because I don't care.
We do not endorse whatever Obscure is about to say.
Midway through the competition, we had all kind of known that we were on the season. So we all started, like, a few of us had gotten wind that we were all on. So we started talking to each other and exchanging looks and kind of giving each other feedback so that we could all do super well on the season. And me and Alice in Wonderland, who is my goodest Judy, had befriended a drag queen from Florida named Madam Hex and a drag queen from Maine named Famine. Famine had been in an ongoing fight with a drag queen named Raya Sunshine from New Hampshire, not the Raya Sunshine from Illinois. Yeah. Different Raya Sunshine, and it's also spelled differently. Raya is a trans woman. That is an important part of the story.
Okay.
So people had known how much I'd spent on the competition compared to other people, just because I had all this money from Disney that I just was like, I want to put it towards drag. That's what I can do at the moment. And it's no biggie. So I used all that money pretty much to pay for the package. So it was really nice drag compared to what a lot of the girls were working with. Because some of them obviously like didn't have great relationships with their family or didn't live at home and had other expenses. And, you know, I'm kind of in that place now where my drag, I can never see myself spending that much on drag ever again in a short amount of time. Unless, you know, duty calls. But people had seen my package and we were giving each other feedback, and these girls were kind of intimidated. They'd seen how good my package was comparatively, and they got really intimidated, and there was a neon runway. And this girl, Famine, was wearing a burnt orange dress. It was not neon. It didn't look neon. It couldn't have been neon, because neon reads. When something is neon, you can tell even on camera. Mm-hmm. Like, it is very clear. And it was also a lot of black on the outfit. So, like, it not being neon and then there being a lot of black too, it just was like, I'm like, you're in trouble unless you redo this look. And she's like, well, I can't redo it. And it is neon, and shut up. And I was like, okay. We were on a FaceTime call at one point talking about our competitors, and somebody on that call had called Rhea a man. Ooh. To which I replied, that is not fucking cool. Mm-hmm. That is not something you should be doing. I understand that she's never going to find this out. Spoiler alert, she did. But you shouldn't be talking about people like that. Misgendering is not a funny joke. It's not a funny ha ha ha. It's not humor. It's just rude at the end of the day, is basically what I said. Mm-hmm. And that happened. They didn't joke about it again. Flash forward into the competition. So I told her that her neon dress didn't look good. She had a freak out when I told her that. And she's like, we can't be friends because you just are nasty. And I'm like, I'm not being nasty. I'm giving you honest feedback. I'm telling you from a person that has a package that is very, very polished and very put together compared to what a lot of people are bringing. And I would hate for you to fall behind in a challenge that you don't want to do. Like, that you don't want to fall behind in. Like, you don't want that for yourself. So I'm just being nice by telling you, improve your runway. Even though you're my competition, mm-hmm. I benefit from you doing poorly at the end of the day. But I took it out to be like, I took it out of my own, like, heart to be like, hey, girl, I really don't want to see you go home on this episode. Just, like, change your runway. She took it the wrong way. Anyways, the competition started at this point because we'd pre-filmed it and then everything had happened. There was still kind of that bad blood and we weren't getting along. But also I had kind of rekindled the friendship between Rhea and Famine. The competition starts. I'm doing really good. Allison's doing really good. We're clearly front runners at that point. What happens? There's a confessional filmed that talks about how I personally referred to Rhea Sunshine as a man.
What?
Which took me by surprise. I said, what? Because this is something based on a FaceTime call that only four people were on. So I immediately knew, I mean, it was the queen who said it. And Rhea starts talking about it online. I wonder who, like, imagine being that disgusting and misgendering me. And I swiped up on the story and I'm like, girl, who misgendered you? And she's like, don't play that. And I'm like, what? These girls, who, mind you, were laughing hard about a trans woman being misgendered, suddenly turned the tables to try to absolve themselves of the blame. And at that point, there was an onslaught of people making gross memes about me. Like, there was a photo edited of me in front of a burning trans flag. There was, like, all these disgusting comments made online, people unfollowing me, people from the local scene. Like, there are people like Cheeky stopped talking to me because of that, because it was such a crazy thing online. And it's unfortunate that people kind of stopped talking to me because of something that never happened. And it's something that I will never kind of be able to ever really talk about, I feel like, in a way that people will understand the entire side of the story, because there were, like, screenshots of me saying something about I had an Abraham David Levy dress, their, like, corset set that I had commissioned, and at that time there was some discussion of him making disparaging remarks and misgendering somebody on Facebook. They used that as further fuel to the fire. to kind of sell this story. And it was only because I was doing better than them in the competition. Not because they personally had an issue with me, but they weaponized somebody's identity to hash out their own personal vendetta against me for whatever reason, which is something that I will never forgive them for. Many of the queens who were very against me at the time have come to me and been like, I wish I knew the full story, and I'm sorry that everybody kind of jumped on you like that without really hearing you or listening to what you had to say. Especially because I was the only one who actually spoke out about it when it happened. When the person who actually did say it said it, I was the only one who said anything about why it wasn't cool to say things like that. And I was the only one who was there to kind of be there for Rhea when she wasn't even in the room. So that turned into a shit show of where they just wanted to eliminate. The host very much had it out for me at that point because she was very much on board with these people because they were closer with her. Mm. So they basically eliminated Allison, Alice, and then me all in succession towards the end of the competition just because we were all friends. Yeah, and it really sucks because, you know, there's people in Brooklyn who I still, you know, miss hanging out with, who I just, you know, don't really have that same relationship with anymore. I'm in nightlife, which is sad, but it's just, you know, like, not really having those friendships anymore does suck because of something that, you know, was out of my control and something that didn't even happen. But I digress. I kind of learned that I can't let that dictate, like, how I view myself, because I know who I am and I know what I stand for. And that competition ended very abruptly for me. I kind of stopped doing drag for like a few months after. And then Visions came along, and then it was just, you know, I completely picked myself back up for that.
Yeah, going into Visions, I went to pretty much every show.
Yeah.
Tell the audience what Visions was.
Visions was my idea to come up with an experimental drag show. Now, Nightgowns is definitely the blueprint for experimental drag shows. So I definitely took after Nightgowns in the sense that, like, I love that Sasha always brought together groups of really cool people. From all different sides of drag and all different expressions. And I always loved that. And Nightgowns hadn't happened in years at that point.
Yeah.
So, like, I want to provide a space for not only people who want to see a drag show like that, but people who I want to expose to the style of drag that haven't been able to. And also I wanted to book people that I know who wouldn't normally get booked at a show like Nightgowns. Because obviously Sasha only books queens that have, you know, some kind of connection to her personally, or she really only books queens that have large followings at this point.
Yes. So yeah. Now she
it's does. Just like, I know a lot of queens who would love to perform on a stage like that. So I was like, I would love to do a show where I am able to introduce people to that style of drag, but also benefit the people that I know that are creative and cool and different and doing fun things. So obviously I like was thinking, like, who are these people that I'm gonna have in this show? And I was like, Martyr, obviously, because she is that kooky creative girl.
Girl.
But and then Vicky, who I'd known to do very creative numbers. And Vicky was another, I feel like it was me, Martyr, and Vicky at Ultimate Drag Pageant that were never taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I didn't take that competition seriously.
I mean, none of us really took it that seriously, but it like sucked that every week I felt like we were treated the harshest because I was like this freak of nature queen at that point. You were doing things that were just so not Manhattan, and Vicky was a woman, so she was treated kind of terribly in this queer space run by a person who wasn't notoriously the most, you know, community driven person. But
I would like to remind our listeners that the views of Obscura are her own.
Are Obscura's views only.
They do not reflect the opinions or viewpoints of this podcast, Martyr or C Tepper. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But yeah, sure. but I wanted to bring those people, and then I was like, also, like, I want to have Allison co-host with me because this is my first time hosting a big show like this, and I don't want there to be any dead air, so I'm going to bring along a co-host to kind of, you know, be there as an extra buffer if there's any slow moments in the show. And I said, Allison, because, like, you don't know Vicky or Martyr, we can book two girls from your scene, which is, like, Philly, Jersey scene, and, who do you want those people to be? And she was like, Lucy Moth, who was doing really cool things at the time, and Venus Mystique, who is now a New York queen, who is very, very
Venus stunning. Is very successful right now.
Yeah.
The big up and comer right now.
She really is. It's kind of incredible to see her really be able to kill it in this scene.
But like, she was killing it in Visions too, because...
Well,
I'm always looking for new people to, like, keep an eye on. And, like, I have followed her immediately. That is...
Yeah, no, she... The thing is, I had seen them at a pageant they'd all done, and I was like, oh, these are really... This is good drag, what they were doing. Not that I'm the great arbiter of taste, but I do think that I put together a very fun and unique kind of diverse cast, and... I just continued to kind of roll with that. I just wanted there to be kind of like fun themes that weren't too like specific, because I hate when a drag show has a super specific theme and the parts of that theme that are the most palatable get snatched up, and then there's always a drag queen stuck with like, oh, it's a Harry Potter show and I have to play the owl. Like, nobody wants to do that. So I was like, I'm not going to do any... Also, I would never do a Harry Potter show, putting that out there. I just, like, wanted it to be a fun experience for people. And I was really happy with how the show started going. I mean, the first show was definitely, like, an incredible moment. But the second show was really when I was like, this is fierce. So flashing forward, I had been looking for spaces to kind of renew my show and amp it up. And I had started working at $3 Bill as a lighting tech. And I had talked to Brenda, the owner of $3 Bill. And I was like, I used to have this show and I haven't performed it in a while, but I would love to bring it back in a bigger way. And she was like, oh, okay, just find a date and make sure people come. And yeah, so... Thus began the Visions Reloaded era. To make a long story short, I got to book a lot of really cool drag queens during Visions. I got to book Dawn before Drag Race. I got to book Bijou Bentley, which was like, felt like returning a favor. And Milk and Mondo Guerra were at that show, which was so cool. And Marina Abramović obviously came to the first Visions, which was really cool. After Visions, put down the brushes until now, pretty much.
Threw them in the fire. But they didn't die.
Oh,
they had crystallized.
They crystallized, and I actually had to clean them. For the first time ever, I cleaned my drag brushes.
You've only cleaned your drag brushes once?
No, I clean them like once every year, usually. But now
once every year.
Yeah, but now I've been getting better at cleaning them.
Every year,
girl.
The thing is, I have a Veramona color switch. So a Veramona color switch is like a little like spongy piece of plastic that you rub the brush on, and it takes the excess shadow off the brush.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
So it's like an easy way of getting your brushes.
It still doesn't clean them, though.
I know. Yeah. But I've never had an infection, so...
I do know one drag queen who said she's never cleaned her brushes in her life. And granted, her makeup looks really good. I'm just like, how are you not...
Dead.
Dead.
Bacterial infection.
Yeah, girl. my brushes are overdue, and that's maybe like 2 weeks. So like, oof,
yeah,
I can't
but you're
imagine.
very, very fortunate to have chosen such a specific aesthetic where you don't have to do more than red. I feel
I use several shades of red. Everyone thinks I do one shade of red, but I will get no definition. Anyways, I won't get into it.
I would love to see you paint though, like now, because I remember I watched you paint back in the day when you still had the beard. And it was a very different experience.
What are you talking about? She still has the beard in our logo.
I remember you using activated charcoal for your beard.
I did.
Did
because
you?
I yeah, because I really wanted a very dark black, and like no shadow I was finding was like a good black for this technique I was doing. But activated charcoal was like, you can put it on your face, it's fine.
Oh yeah, I use it as a face mask.
You're not supposed to consume it though, I will say that.
You can consume it, but you can't be on prescriptions if you're consuming.
Oh yeah, because it makes you throw up.
No, it doesn't make you throw up, it just will suck in the prescription.
Yeah. But yeah, I really wanted a dark black, and I couldn't find any powder that was working, so I was just like, this is a cheap option, let me do it.
Yeah,
it worked. No. I don't think I have that bag anymore, but yeah,
honestly it's crazy to think how the makeup I've used has kind of changed over the years. Like I have some of the products that I started using when I started drag that I still like have implemented as part of my makeup routine, but like I change up the products I use so often. It's wild. Just because I like to try new things, and sometimes I find things that I like, and sometimes I try things and I don't like them. I really want to try the new Trixie liners. Those look really
Oh yeah.
Well, considering my liners that I usually use, I ordered some new ones a week ago and then haven't shipped them. I might have to get some Trixie
Oh
liners.
really? That's funny.
Also, I heard they're not as good. Like, they're as good as Inglot. And, like, although I heard Inglot was going out of business. So I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
I've heard so many things about certain brands going out of business that just, I feel like, don't happen. The only brand that I've truly have seen been wiped off the face of the earth, like it never existed, is OCC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
OCC had such a death grip on the drag community. Of
yeah, them. It did.
Thanks, Willem.
Thanks, Willem.
Literally, she was like the influencer.
Well, she was like the face of the brand.
Yeah.
So... You yourself kind of took a break from drag, but you met your current partner, who is a costumer, and you decided to think about drag again, and you also moved to Brooklyn. So a lot of things seem to have happened really quickly.
Yes. It kind of was crazy because I had no intentions of ever coming back into drag. I think that having put down drag for so long kind of made me remember that there still are people who are there, and that there still are people that support my drag and kind of posting on the account very sparingly. Every once in a while, people would be like, when is she making a return? When is she making a return? And I was like, I don't know. And also, like, I wasn't doing drag like I wanted to at the end. I had resorted to doing really soft makeup that just didn't look great to me, and spending like 45 minutes to get ready and wearing costumes that kind of were made very quickly, and just not elevated in the way that I wanted to envision myself. And I kind of fell victim to the Manhattan cookie cutter effect, and it sucked because it like zapped all the joy out of drag for me. And then, like, you know, I was just like, I don't want to do this. I have no creativity anymore. Drag is not fun. It feels like a business. It feels like I'm doing things to please others, which is not the way that I started drag. I started drag as an artistic expression. And I was like, this doesn't feel like the art I want to be making right now. This isn't art. So that happens. And then I met my partner, and my partner, I was like, well, I do drag, but I haven't. And my partner's a costumer, worked when we first met. They were working at the New York City Ballet as a stitcher, making those beautiful ballet costumes and like the Waltz of the Flowers costumes they helped make and a bunch of the ones for the ballets. And basically it got to the point where I was like, I'm itching to start creating in drag again. So started to quietly make some lovely beautiful gowns to quote Aretha Franklin, lovely gowns, and started to take pictures and started to go out again at the end of the year. I went out to Sasha's show because it felt like that was the place to go back to drag, because mm-hmm. it's like where my drag started. So I went out to Sasha's show in drag and then Come On Everybody after, and I actually got to talk to Sasha a bit after the show, and you know, it was very like I haven't seen you in 3 years kind of situation, but yeah. I'm glad that we have the chance to catch up or whatever. I mean, it wasn't like we talked for too long, but it was definitely a moment where I felt like, okay, I can do this again. I feel good. I look good. Thank a million stars for making me meet my partner, who is such an incredible costumer. And it's just been incredible being able to create again and have joy and love drag again. I was talking to Vander about how like it is great to love drag again, because for so long I hated it. But now, like, I used to be one of those people that like did not want to get ready. Like, it would be like the show, and that's when I should have known that like it is time to put down the brushes if getting ready is my least favorite part. But now I love getting ready. I get ready early. I give myself like 3 hours to get ready, which I do not need. but it's been incredible. I like have been having the most fun I've ever had in drag, and I feel like I am serving the most fun looks I've ever served, and I'm really excited to see where the year takes me. And I'm hoping to bring back visions, and I'm hoping for a lot of things to happen, but it is really great to be back.
We're happy you're here.
Likewise, you know. On that note, we're gonna take our last little break, and we're gonna talk about your future.
Ooh, the vision.
Ooh, the vision.
I'm currently being illuminated by Obscura's vision sign.
Literally, though. We can see it.
I know. We'll be right back, kids.
Bye.
Bye.
Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. Flying.
And we're back.
I was like, how long is this gonna go for?
Welcome back, kids. We're doing our usual little wrap up. Obscura, I feel like I might know the answer to this. It is Caitlin's question, but I will ask it.
You always ask it.
Yeah, I know. Do you think you'll ever want to be on Drag Race, Dragula, Camp Wanakiki, Tu Wong Fu's Electric Boogaloo?
I would never do Camp Wanakiki, because that is a great way to say to the world that your drag is not great.
Oop.
Oh, shots fired.
No shame. No shame.
Views are not you shared can't... by Martyr and
Listen.
Okay, you can't say no shade and then say the shadiest thing.
Listen, this is what I will say. Camp Wanakiki is a show that exists for the sole benefit of campy drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
I have not seen a single campy drag queen that I would consider embodies camp in a incredible way beyond that show. I feel like they tend to pick a lot of drag queens. There's some great drag queens from that show. Don't get me wrong. But they tend to pick a lot of drag queens that are kind of a little still workshopping things in their drag, still figuring themselves out. And I feel like it serves the purpose of a great place to workshop drag. But I'm not at that place. I feel like I've moved beyond. Also, I'm just like not that campy. I'm a little campy, but I'm not like campy campy.
But would you do Drag Race or Dragula?
Dragula, I would not do because the extermination challenges make me ill. Not like in like a I like would not be able to do them kind of way, but just like the thought of having to stab myself with a knife 5 times to prove that I still want to be in this competition. I mean, I understand that the exterminations have gotten a little less severe.
I know, like they're no full shade or no shade. They're nothing anymore. They're like so the grossest thing they'll have to do is like drink a gross smoothie, and it's just like,
yeah. Okay. Which I'm like, that is not terrible. I like part of me would like be like, I would rather do that than lip sync for my life, but like.
Mm.
Dragula, I feel like, is a competition I would not excel in just because I feel like I don't entirely fit the bill that they want. I feel like if I wanted to go on television, I would aim big and I would aim for the one with many, many viewers and visibility.
I would shoot Ronald Reagan.
I would. I would shoot him 5 times. Mm. But that's the extermination challenge that I'll do.
Shoot the president.
but I definitely would consider auditioning for you know, the summer camp that isn't the campy camp. because I truly do want to take my drag places and sometimes feel like that's the only place to really be taken seriously. Also, my Instagram engagement is like crap, and I feel like that would be a great ticket to gaining like at least a couple followers.
Yeah.
not that I care about that, but I definitely think that if I get to the point where I feel really good about my art and I want more people to see it and I have something to prove to the world, I'll do it. But I'm not there yet.
Do you have any future upcoming projects to promote?
There is a lot to think about in the world of Obscura when it comes to future projects, because there are a lot of things that I want to do, but are there a lot of things that I'm going to be able to get done is the big question. like I said, I would love to bring Visions back. It has been something that I have had such a passion about since that first show. And I'm sad it kind of slowly kind of took wind of becoming a less interesting show for the sake of sales. And I would love to bring it back in an even more authentic way to the original Visions at the Slipper Room, because I do really like hosting and I do really like that show. And I just want to make it a more streamlined and fun experience for people, because I think it would do well in Brooklyn, and I really want to be able to book drag queens that I love and put them all together again, because I hate feeling like I'm not giving anything back to the community when I'm doing drag. Feeling like you're just another drag queen out at the bar has never really felt great to me. But I feel like when I'm hosting a show, I feel like I'm doing what I need to do.
So what is the best advice you've been given in drag or about drag?
There's a few pieces of advice that I have been given about drag. I would say Poppy told me always have a button at the end of your number. So important. Like a big ending. Something to wrap it all up and make it make sense.
I thought you meant like an actual button. I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
I was thinking that too. Versus like,
make sure you have a button. I've been told bad advice before, like simplify your drag and your performances if you want to get booked more. I don't need to be booked 5 times a week to like what I do. And I don't think it's good advice to tell people to change their drag to please others. Because drag is very personal and drag is an art form, at least how I see it. But I will say the best piece of advice that I've ever been given, when it comes to nightlife, is it is never so nice to meet you. It is so nice to see you. And that is single-handedly the most important piece of advice I have ever been given.
That's real. That's really good advice, actually.
Yeah. I'm one of those bitches that's kind of a cunt when you're like, it's nice to meet you. I'm like, we've met. Sorry about it. No, that's great. Actually, I'm gonna start using that.
Yeah.
It's really good advice. It's like I said, it's the best piece of advice I've ever received.
Okay. My favorite question. Mix Obscura Peridot. Yeah, I'm dead naming. Can you give us a tantalizing tale from nightlife? Something scandalous, something juicy, something dramatic. What do you got for us?
I'm going to tell you about the worst drag show I've ever done.
Oh.
So, there was a new venue. I used to live in Chelsea. There was a new venue opening up that was like a dinner theater venue. And I reached out to them and I said, would you like a drag show at your dinner theater venue?
I think I was in attendance at this show.
And let's just say this was a venue that did not know how to promote shows because they had not been around for very long. The ticket price that they requested I put was a little high for a drag show, especially when it didn't really include much with the ticket. I think the ticket included like a $10 food and drink credit or something. And it was definitely a very large, it was a huge venue. And I was like, oh, it's in a hotel. Like, I could probably get people to come. And also, it's like a big midtown corporate kind of like venue. I could make this work. And I was like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to do this show. The show was not done. The show, I literally was told the morning of, they're like, we've sold 15 tickets. I'm like, that is by far, I literally asked them, can we cancel the show or reschedule it? Because this is not being promoted properly and drag shows have to be promoted a certain way. And they had basically not listened to any of my requests when it came to put this on the poster, blah, 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 blah. Like, I had given them a poster to use. They had asked for a different photo and they'd used the photo that was just my face to promote it. And I'm like, people are going to look at that face and they're going to say, who is that? There's no information. They promoted it without any information. And a queen dropped out of the show because she double booked herself. And she was like a big draw of the show because she was a live singer. And it just became slow. It was, what was so funny was I called it the dazzling dinner show and it was anything but. So I show up to this venue. I'm like, we got to get this done. The queens came who did it. It was Robin and Reese Havoc. And I think Allison was also in it. Yeah, Allison was in it. And it was so empty. It was so empty. The room looked like it had 3 people in it, even though there was like groups of people. It was such a huge room that it looked like there was nobody there. And I came out and did my opening number. And within like 2 minutes, my dress, I had this idea of doing like a chainmail dress. And I found one online from Fashion Nova. And I was like, oh, this will work. It broke within a minute of me performing the opening number. So I had to get changed really quickly backstage in between numbers. I forgot to basically introduce the show on the mic because I just was like, let's get this over with. Let's get the drag queens out. Let's fucking leave. Like, I don't want to be here. It was the biggest shit show. And Robin, being the sweetheart that she is, decided to try to help out by jumping on the mic as well. And I appreciated her a lot for doing that. But she made the show sound so much more promising than it was on the mic, if that makes sense. And like at the end of the show, she was like, and when's the next one? And I'm like, no, we're not gonna talk. Do you think that there's a next one? Absolutely not, girl. Context clues. People in the house, and one of them, like three people left after the first number, like so fucking terrible. And what was really crazy is like I was like, I'm gonna try out new numbers, and I felt like all of them fell flat. And then at the end, we finally like, and I think the owners of the venue were there, so it was like extra embarrassing. It was truly the worst drag night of my life, and like, I had booked everybody and kind of set aside like money to be able to pay for everybody just because I was like, this show is not selling well. I better do that. The show made like $60.
Wow.
It's terrible.
Hell yeah.
Cause the venue took like most of the cut. So yeah, it was really, it was crazy. It was so like such a shit show. I'm so lucky that in six times I've hosted shows, like produced and hosted shows, only two of them have been flops. And a flop at $3 bill is not really a flop anywhere else. A flop at $3 bill is a good night at like any other bar.
At the Rosemont. Bill...
What?
I said a flop at $3 bill is a good night at the Rosemont.
Yes! No, you don't understand. Like, $3 bill is a hard venue to sell because even if you sell 100 tickets, the room still looks empty.
Yeah, it's true.
Like,
it's
there were 150 people at my first show there. It felt like there were two people in the audience.
Yeah.
It was a hard venue. Yeah, it's a hard venue. You really need to sell out. Otherwise, it's just like...
Yeah.
Or add chairs. Chairs really fill the room.
That's true, actually.
That's another thing, what I was thinking of bringing back. My favorite layout for a seating at a show was switch and play. They would have like a row of chairs and then standing room in the back, and it was just like you pay what you want and come in and that's the show. I would do that for Visions when Visions comes back, because I also am like, I don't want to have to charge, I don't know, like $15 if somebody wants to come and they can't afford it.
I feel that.
Good drag should be accessible.
Amen.
But Brad drag is everywhere.
Listen, another great piece of advice is, what is it? It is, all drag is valid, but yeah, not all drag is good. And I've internalized that when I'm thinking of my kookiest numbers, and I'm like, this would be a very fun and different number. But is it good? and Safira Cristal said it best. Good is good.
She's right.
She truly is. She's a queen of the people.
I think so. All right, last question. Besides the immediate future, where do you want to take your drag in the future?
In the future, I would love to I would love to expand the horizons, not just do visions in the future, like have like maybe one or two other gigs to do on the side. I would love to do like a party. Just because I had so much fun at Nothing's Little Shindig, where like only Xana performed and it was fierce, but for the rest of the night, everybody just kind of kikied and had a good time, and we were all out in drag, and it just felt fun to like go out of the house in drag and not have to worry about performing, and you know, just serve a little look and hang out with people you like. I love that, and I would love to do something like that in the future. That obviously is not like exact carbon copy of that kind of event, but something in that vein. And I would love to throw as well, I would love to throw like a big party, like consistently, that is like an event, some kind of event, like a surrealist ball or something. I think that would be so fierce. And it just feels very true to my brand. I feel like there are so many fun events in Brooklyn, and it's really hard to compete with them.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of me thinking of ways to make something unique. And it's really hard to gauge what people will like. People don't understand how difficult it is to put together shows.
It's crazy hard.
But I have seen very niche shows do really well at Come On Everybody, so I've been eyeing her.
I feel like that makes sense for you.
Come On Everybody. It's a good venue.
It is a really good venue.
I like the stage.
It is a perfect size.
My only complaint. I hate the bar situation so much.
Oh, how skinny it is!
Yeah,
it's horrible.
Yeah,
they have the back bar too, but like half the time it's not open. So it's just
what they really need to do is just tear the wall down in between the tables and the actual bar.
Yeah.
If they just did that, it would be a normal sized venue.
But the thing is that there's a room in between there.
There's a staircase.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a staircase.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I know. It is an awkward place. From my understanding, I don't know why they didn't put the bar in the bigger room.
Yeah.
But maybe they just didn't build it.
It might have had to do with plumbing or something.
Yeah. Who knows?
I don't think it was ever meant to be as crowded as it gets either.
Yeah, but it is. I was there for when Sasha did Be Cute. It was so fun being there. And I like wanted to make it out there tonight, but my partner's arriving very late from their recent contract. So I am not going out.
What's tonight? Oh, A+?
Vidania has a Jessica Simpson tribute show. And something that I thought was so funny about the way she advertised it is it says, a tribute to one of the singers of all time.
She sure is. That's my chicken or fish lady.
So, that's right.
Yeah. I know my... See, Caitlin, I know things.
I know. Sometimes you do. I'm really proud of you for that one.
Like, now I know about Chelsea Pierce.
You know what? I can teach you all kinds of things about this city.
Yeah.
Okay, my defense about Chelsea Piers, it sounds like it's a sports facility.
It is.
Why the fuck would I know anything about that? Why the fuck would I know anything about that?
It's just like a venue that like all New Yorkers at some point in their lives end up at. For whatever event.
Yeah, like you're either going to a bowling birthday party.
Yeah, literally.
You're going ice skating with friends. Yeah.
It's just like something you just end up at.
Yeah, like your school.
So that's our next birthday party. Our next birthday party is at Chelsea Pierce, Caitlin.
We should do it.
I'm down.
We should do a bowling party.
Oh my God, my 30th.
Like when I was a kid. I always have my birthdays.
Oh my God, wait. Y'all should do like a full curveball and book the giant gymnastic room that has that giant foam pit.
You think we have money?
Okay. Like, the thing is that I have no idea how much that shit costs but I can only assume it's an incredulous amount of money because every party I went to of a kid who had a party there, it was like from my private school.
Yeah.
And some of those kids, I remember being told by one of those kids, "You don't go skiing? How poor are you?" Or one of them said, "You don't have a private jet? How does your family get around?"
They met skiing like,
I've never been skiing. I don't plan to go skiing. I see videos of people skiing and I'm like, everything about the aesthetic, like that 70s ski aesthetic, I love. It is so fabulous. The women in the cunty like furs and the après ski outfits, love. The act of falling down a mountain on two planks of wood, terrifying to me.
I almost died skiing, so I'm with you on this.
That's what I'm saying. Like skiing accidents, like they can happen to anybody. Gwyneth Paltrow.
I know.
And on that, we should close out.
Yeah, we should. I'm like, we're still recording.
I know we're still recording. Obscura, thank you so much for joining us. It was a
thank
pleasure
you for to having
you reacquainted. Where can the kids find you on the internet?
The kids can find me at Official Obscura on Instagram, and I believe the same exact tag on the Twitter. And maybe you can find me at a buzz cut coming up, or just out and about, imposing my reign of terror on Brooklyn nightlife.
And I'll see. Perfect. I'll be right there, right next to you. Honestly, let's get into it. Obscura, it was nice to see you again.
Yes.
Wow.
I was Martyr.
I was C Tepper.
And this was Wig It Out. Bye, bitch.
I'm C. Tepper. You can follow me on Instagram at C-T-E-P-P-E-R and read my book, The State of Drag, where I interviewed 175 drag queens from around the world. All proceeds go to charity on Amazon.com.
Ooh, I love that. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Drag the Martyr. And if you have any thoughts, comments, dick pics, send them to dragthemartyr@gmail.com.
Listen, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Pandora.
And catch up with past episodes on work.com. That's WERRRK.com. Artwork for Wigging Out was provided by Glitter Baby Online. That's Glitter Baby Online. Thank you.